Right, so any questions or folks who strongly disagree with anything I've said, and Boris, in some cases, that's probably justified as well. Yeah. Ah, full agreement with everything I said.
No, I want to come back to your opinion that good modelers are good programmers. I think this makes the hypothesis that models are an abstraction of the solution. But in many activities like requirements engineering, models are just an abstraction of the problem. And so, based on your reasoning, good modelers should be good practitioners of the problem.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good point you make, because that is an assumption that's underlying that hypothesis. So, yes. And you're right. If not, we apply it to say system level or requirements level, it now means that a good modeler must have a good understanding of the domain in which they're working in as well. And this may not necessarily be done at the code level, because it may be that you've never really generated code, and this is sort of a first time for the software set. But you should have a very good knowledge of the domain as well. That's a good point. And it's a point that the folks who do process modeling, for example, will also say, well, I don't really need implementation level detail, but I should have a very good understanding of the processes that I'm trying to model, where the inefficiencies are, etc., or what are the properties that I want to analyze in that process as well. Good. Hey, Gio.
Do you think that things like executable modeling could help in teaching modeling? So, I mean, people could, students could try a new model and just see how it is executed, just to have an idea. Okay, this is maybe not, I should fix that or fix that should be.
I agree, especially down at the, and so I have a colleague at CSU, Jim Beeman, who claims that, you know, a student writes a program and they execute the program to check whether the program is good or not, where goodness is based on did it generate the correct output as well. And so if you want to judge the goodness of a model in terms of does it have the required effect, in terms of some type of effect, yes, then it's good to execute. So notice I say execute, because I also think formal models where you don't really execute, but you analyze it to sort of predict some property, that in a sense also helps. So I remember I also teach a formal methods class, and in the early days I used Z, okay? And Z does not have a nice set of tools. There was Z-Eves some time back, but to use Z-Eves, you needed to have, you know, mature knowledge of theorem proving, etc. Now I use Alloy, and the students like it. Why? Because of the Alloy analyzer. Okay, they can write the predicates and poof, hit the button, and they see the counter example, etc. as well, if it's an assertion, or you know, use a predicate and you ask Alloy, generate for me an instance of satisfaction. And if it doesn't, then you know something may be wrong. But it's that feedback that you need. And so if you think about executable as providing feedback to the modeler, and that will certainly help you know, reinforce good modeling skills as well. But then you have to look at the type of feedback you get. So notice here the feedback was more in terms of properties or functionality. There are other aspects of modeling that makes it good that type of feedback won't really. Do you have the right abstraction? No, and that's not necessarily something that you get with what we consider to be executable models. No, yeah.
One criteria for success of a given technology is when somehow it disappears, in the sense that it fades away in the background. Somehow that's what we have been seeing with, for instance, aspects, where they are not there, they are not considered any longer as, you know, something very trendy, but they are everywhere in every ubiquitous. You know, web service that everybody is doing. Yep. If you're using Spring, you're just using Aspect without knowing, and so on.
Yep.
And in some sense, I would claim that at some level, it's also the same thing for models, but just people are not calling them models, but they are calling them configurations or XML something or whatever.
Yep.
And then it's there. They are using a lot of DSLs in practice to customize. I mean, to drive frameworks. Very complex frameworks are too complex to program directly. So people are using kind of DSLs for driving their application or customizing the framework toward a specific need.
Yeah.
But they do not recognize them as models. Whereas they are. And quite often they are losing a lot of in terms of, because it is not explicitly a model, it's just, you know, a configuration file, they are losing a lot of possibility of analysis, validation, and understanding and abstraction, but still they are using models somehow. By the definition we have a model, they are using model even if the model is weird and the syntax is wrong and the semantics is, you know, completely implicit and all of that. But and somehow it means that we have both failed and succeeded into that, because we have failed in using the abstraction we want them to have to use, and we have succeeded because they're actually using, I mean, the vision is there. It's just they are using it the wrong way.
And you're right in the sense that it's important to make it explicit that they know that they're doing modeling, because then they can leverage or properly leverage MDD tools as well. Now, it's the fact that we can call what they're doing modeling a result of us as MDD researchers, or is this something that they were doing all this time as such that... But I think in some cases we did have an impact, in other cases we didn't, but I think you're also right that we need to bring this out to them so that they can see how the MDD technologies that we call the techniques and processes can be applied to their process to make it better in a sense. And in a sense, I think this is what happened with that optimizing compiler, where those guys were modeling. And it's when they made those connections, then they could see, but we can leverage these tools that the MDD community has developed in our work as well. So that's another challenge for us out there, that is to show the users out there that what they're actually doing is modeling, and that there are things that we're developing that they can leverage in their work. But another point, you started talking about tools. So I would like to see the same thing happen with tools, MDD tools, where they sort of fade into the background. That is, they're not viewed as something that is, getting in the way of their work, okay? And I think a successful tool, and I haven't seen one yet, unless someone can tell me, is one that just fits the way that a software development work, a software developer works, to the point that they, it's not viewed as a sort of burden on their processes as yet. I have yet to see a tool that satisfies that. Okay. Good. Should have said more controversial things, but anyway.
Okay. What about the idea to say that modeling is programming? Because what is programming is giving, is expressing a solution for a given program using a specific language.
Yep.
So expressing a solution that is in your mind in a way of language you use, language are some construction with specific syntax and some powerful.
Yep.
So what is difference between using UML, Java, C++?
The level of abstraction. But I do agree with you that programming is modeling. And so in the early part of the talk, remember I said that when we write a program, We're building a solution using the abstractions that are provided by the programming language. So, for example, when we make an assignment statement, we're abstracting out the location of that variable, etc. And so in that sense, there is abstraction going on in there. And so in, you know, Java, etc. is a modeling language, okay? But the difference now is in the level of abstraction, that is the amount of detail that is removed in that modeling language. And in a sense, modeling languages like UML allow you to abstract even more detail out of your description, okay? And it's interesting to, just as a side note, it's interesting to read John Backus, the late John Backus's account of how he tried to convince folks to use Fortran. Because back then it was assembly language, and he met with resistance with folks that said, why should we move up that level of abstraction to, you know, it's far more efficient for us to, you know, work down at the assembly language level, etc. And it's good to see the parallels between, you know, the move from assembly to higher level programming languages and the type of arguments that were being you know, pushed as this is why we shouldn't pay attention to work on high level programming languages. And to some extent we've seen those same arguments being pushed to the modeling folks as well. Yeah. But as I keep saying, we probably would not be developing the type of software systems that we're developing now if it wasn't for that shift in levels of abstraction. And I think this is the importance of modeling as we think about it now. It will allow us to, develop even more complex software systems than what we're doing now. Back then, if you told a guy I was going to write software that would fly a plane back in the 60s, they would look at you and say, ooh, in machine code? No, not at that level of abstraction. Yep.
Since the history of computer science is just a perpetual raise in the level of abstractions, as you said, from assembler to third generation languages and modeling,
right,
do you think that we achieved the limit of abstraction exercise by models? Or there would be another?
I think we've reached a limit. I think Dijkstra's realization where the fundamental concepts, loops, choice, assignment, okay, those are general purpose abstractions that served us well. I don't think we can go further than those general purpose abstractions. I think it's far more promising to look at domains, okay? And this is why I think domain specific languages are very important today. If we want to raise that level of abstraction, we sort of have to look at problems and solutions within a domain, and then we can come up with abstractions. But in terms of general purpose, that is where we see, will UML become a programming language? I doubt it. Yep, not in that. I don't think that will happen, okay? What I do see, though, is that within particular domains, yep, we will see, those very high-level programming, domain-specific programming languages. But that's just my opinion. There are others who completely disagree with me and think that we will see, if not UML, but some other modeling language that's a programming language. Yeah.
A particular statement in the slides that I found interesting about this possible view of software development as a search problem. Can you clarify a little bit more about this? And here, what would it be, the search space?
Right. It could be anything. And this is research that Richard Page talked about when he's talking about exploring decision making, etc. But put that aside. If you look at design and you look at what is it that we're trying to do when we design or come up with a solution, well, basically we're trying to find good solutions in a space of a number of possible solutions. And so, trying to find solutions that satisfy, possibly conflicting type qualities, etc. You can shape that as a sort of search problem where you're searching the space of design solutions as sort to try to find a sort of good fit solution that is as good a fit to the requirements and qualities that you need, okay? And it may be that if we think about software design in that way as a search problem, and that might help us rethink the tools and techniques that we use for design. Yeah. Okay, so this has to do more with the supporting the exploratory view of software design. Yeah. Okay. Well, you can always catch up with me during the breaks. I'm here until tomorrow as well to chat about any of this that I've presented. But thanks a lot for your attention. Yeah.